If I had $1 million, what would I be doing? I'd be sleeping in on a Saturday morning. Welcome to It Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guy. It's going to be a great day to get some stuff done in and around your house. Some of the humidity has moved on out. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Ernie. I agree. If you had $1 million, what would you do?
Change my name and move.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Stay the course.
No.
Stay the course and fly under the radar.
I have to hide from all those relatives you don't know today. who will surface and, your grandpa promised me a portion of this land. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know, those that are on the surface, you'll see them a lot more often, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but it'd be a nice problem to have.
It would be.
Lisa and I talk about that all the time. Change our names and travel and move and fly the grandsons in to see us.
I gotcha. So you just as you stated, the humidity levels are gone.
Oh, yeah,
it'll be a beautiful
nice
weekend. Anything in the makings here for you this weekend?
Well, I hope to be able to get out on the bike sometime tomorrow, but today I've got to play catch up and get some things finished and got a couple of things I need to tidy up around the house.
I do as well. So I'm going to take advantage of the cooler temperatures. Uh-huh. This past week, I was working quite a bit in the yard. Remember last week I was telling you about the trees that had fallen in the yard
from
that one windy storm we had a week and a half ago or so.
Right.
Getting caught up a little bit there, and it takes a little time.
It does.
Now I have a little bit more appreciation for your old wood project.
Oh, man. And I was just, we were looking at that last night. I still have just a few of the big chunks laying around back there to get split up and put away. And the good news is we've got plenty of seasoned firewood to get through through the year.
I hear you. I have a little bit of firewood myself for down in the back. I have a fire pit.
Uh-huh.
As a matter of fact, I burned quite a bit of wood the other day.
Good.
Just cleaning things up. And went down this past week to see our friends at Bud Herbert Motors.
Oh, did you?
Oh, I have something embarrassing to tell you about.
Oh, lucky.
Not with those guys, but just something on my end.
I can't wait to hear this.
Oh, yeah. It has to do with power equipment, brother.
Ah, wonderful.
Yeah, remember I always say a fool with the tools of fool?
Oh, yes.
Well, not really, but this situation I know better, and it's just something that I totally overlooked.
A little oops.
It kind of set me back, and but at the same time, I was able to pick up another tool that's a very handy tool.
Yeah,
so I did purchase something else down at Bud Herbert's.
I knew that was going to happen. You don't go in there without coming out with a brand new tool.
I'll tell you, I'm like a kid in a candy store, but I'm pretty well behaved, for a lack of a better term. But, and it was funny. What was it the other day? Oh, my leaf blower. Remember that nice leaf blower I purchased, picked up down there, vac as well? Tina's like, when did you get that?
Do you buy stuff like that to sneak it into your garage?
No, I don't have to sneak it in. She just, you know, all of a sudden it's like, where did you get that?
Yeah, the radar goes up. There's a sensor that our wives have that goes, something new is in the house. What did you get?
What did you get? But I'll elaborate a little bit more about that. But as a matter of fact, when you go down there the next time, you'll see that they put in a new floor.
Oh, wow.
Really spiffy. I like
it. Nice.
Yeah, made everything on the showroom floor look really good. And all that John Deere stuff that's sitting in there, I just salivate, you know.
Yeah.
But I have to tell you that story here in a little bit.
Okay. We'll look forward to that. Going to be a beautiful day, lower humidity. Temperatures expected to climb up to the mid-80s. Overnight, it will be 66 under mostly sunny skies today. We'll see some clouds drifting through. It will be a little warmer on Sunday, high of 88. And again, lots of sunshine, but rain moving back into the forecast on Monday. Did you get any of that rain yesterday? I know, you know, I was down at my buddy's garage yesterday afternoon. It was raining like pouring it out of a barrel. I text Lisa, and she goes, not a drop over in Villa Hills.
No, just a few sprinkles, nothing major. And I think, you know, I'm talking about down at the garden center at Jackson, so we didn't really see anything, just a few drops. As I got closer to home after I left work, you know, I noticed that we did have a little bit of rain up on the hill in Taylor Mill. But, it's kind of weird how that sometimes happens.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So we do need some showers there at the house. And I just was dumbfounded that there wasn't any rain at all, less than 2 miles away.
I think that the last couple of weeks we've had some hit and miss showers throughout the tri-state area. Some areas have gotten more rain than others.
Right.
You know, the best soaking that we had was July 4th weekend, that Sunday, Monday.
I heard
that.
Yeah,
you were,
I was down,
you were down at the lake, but
mm-hmm.
That was a much needed rainfall. I know that kind of dampened, no pun intended there, some of the July 4th activities, but it was drier than most people were led to believe or think.
Yeah, it has been pretty dry.
And that really comes into play if you're trying to keep your lawn looking really nice, too. Mm-hmm. You know, just when you go through the summer months, July and August, those are the 2 months that are it's tough on your lawn. You know,
sure.
When it gets hot, it gets dry, you get that lack of precipitation. But those gentle soaking rains,
nothing better.
You can't buy those, and they're few and far in between.
Agreed. Yeah, we had a chance to stop out and see our friend Jesse Tack from Afternoons here on B105. Remember a couple of weeks he talked about asking us to come over and take a look at a few things, issues he was having back in his yard.
Yeah.
And that was a nice little visit. We'll talk about that later on in the show, too. Plus, as we mentioned, a lot of people, we get these questions all the time. They're expecting to pick those tomatoes, and they're waiting for them just to get ripe. And then suddenly they notice a couple of issues that they've been having.
There's some tomato issues. And if you're out at the farmer's markets, too, you'll find some tomatoes, but they're not really quite all ripening
yet.
We're just around the corner.
And I have to thank Todd from Baton and Steve out there last week after we talked about their peach truck.
Oh, yeah,
going
the
up.
Peach truck, right?
We didn't get there until after it was already gone, but they were kind enough to save us a bushel of them. So,
good deal. I have to ask you, what is a bushel? Is it a good deal? Is it?
Well, I think so. It's a great big box. I'll have to ask Lisa.
Complimentary? Did you buy those?
No, we bought them.
I was just curious. Is it a good price on the peach truck?
Oh, yeah. I didn't think it was bad at all for what we got. A gigantic box full of them.
Yeah.
And Mammy came over to the house the very next day. They got the canning supplies out of the basement, and she canned. I have to pull up her picture and take a look.
We need to talk more about that this morning, too, canning.
I think that would be a great topic for our show. Maybe get somebody to come in and talk a little bit about canning.
I'm in with you because it was, a couple of years ago I did a newsletter on canning.
Right.
I wish more people would do that. What a great American tradition right there.
Yeah, and I have to tell you that Lisa couldn't have been more proud. Adam, the youngest, came over and started asking her a couple of questions. She goes, you're going to start canning some things? So he is. He's going to carry on the family tradition that's been passed down from Lisa's grandparents to her mom and dad and through her now to Adam. And it's a neat experience. And I have my mom's old pressure cooker my sister gave.
Right. I remember you talking about that. Did you?
It's awesome.
Didn't you lose the top to that?
Yeah, I'm still looking for that little release valve. And I'm not sure where to go to get that.
We'll just stick gum up there on the top.
749 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and great day to get some stuff done in and around your house. I got some stuff to do down in my basement and in the backyard, and then hopefully goof off all day on Sunday.
There you go.
I got to get all this stuff taken care of because, you know, the NFL season is going to be starting here soon.
Yeah, a couple weeks.
Yeah.
I'm anxious, too. And your buddy Tom Brady, I think he's going to have to do a little bit of time here.
Should have been over already.
Actually, they went pretty far last year in the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing.
Yeah, I agree.
It cracks me up how they waste so much money on that kind of thing.
And it's still not resolved.
Right. Well, he just admitted or just said, okay, that's it. My legal battle's over. I'm going to serve the suspension and move on. So we've got to start planning our Sundays around the Bengals games and all that stuff. So we've got to get things finished around the house and around the yard.
You're absolutely right.
And
get it done.
I did open up my wife Lisa's Facebook page, and I'll have to wait till she wakes up. But it looks like there might have been 9 or 10 quarts and 4 or 5 pints of
peaches.
Yeah. Can't wait.
Oh, I love peaches. I know. I really do. It just, when you, and you bite into one when it's just right. It just, it's all over your cheeks. It's almost like you have a hole in your chin. All that good stuff.
Really, really, really good. I know that one of our favorites is when she'll, you know, go down to the basement and pull up, just like the other day. Mm-hmm. She went down and got some canned green beans from last season and some sweet potatoes and...
It's all good stuff.
Grilled up a burger. It was awesome.
You know, the other day, it was last Monday, I went down to Lunkin Airport. A friend of mine, he's like the curator of the Airline Aviation Museum there at Lunkin. And definitely I made a point to stop right over there and see those guys that set up there at the farmer's market.
Uh-huh.
There were peaches there that they were tasty looking. I picked up some green beans.
Uh-huh.
And what else did I pick up? Oh, potatoes. Mm. And again, they had those guys that they were apologizing. They ran out of tomatoes. They're not all quite turning red yet or ripening yet, but they're starting to. And the corn they ran out of. But it's that time of year, you know, get out and check out some of those farmers markets. And I'm just, my mouth's watering right now because I'm hungry. And, it's that time. And you're talking canning.
Right.
I wish more people would do it.
Well. Hopefully we can encourage a few more.
Yeah, we'll do our best.
Yeah. Hey, the other thing, you know, we were out at Baton's. We walked back and took a look at their mum production setup. Mm-hmm. And when we were out there on Saturday, they've now moved those to a couple of other houses and doing some work there because they're about to move to the next stage. And we have Ruth on the line from Indiana who's got a mum question for you.
Sure.
Good morning, Ruth. Thanks for hanging on.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are y'all?
Wonderful. What's going on with your mums?
Well, that's just it. I want to start growing some of my own, but how do I know if the seeds are hardy?
You know what? I'm ignorant to the fact of sowing mum seed or what have you. To be honest with you, most of your mums today they're cuttings.
They're what?
They are cuttings.
Cuttings.
Yeah, they're the tip cuttings that a lot of the growers get in. They plug them. They bring them on.
Uh-huh.
And, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Did it come back every year, though, or?
Well, there are some that are more hardy than others. The Belgian mums, the, there's another one. The mammoth mums are extremely hardy. We don't like to call them hardy mums as much as we used to in years past because, you know, we've come so far with different hybridized varieties and so forth in different colors. And I think we've lost some of that that hardiness in some varieties.
Right.
You know, mums are shallow rooted, so that's one of the issues with mums. And a lot of times people, when they purchase mums late in the year, they don't always necessarily get them in the ground soon enough to where they start rooting in. And a lot of times going through the winter months, they'll heave out of the ground because of the movement with the ground, you know, from the freezing and thawing. And a lot of times once they get up, that crown freezes out.
Right.
But, you know, and another little tip, and I can't really honestly answer this, but things I've read and things I've experienced personally is if I were to leave the mum plant intact after it died back and cut it back late winter, early spring, I had better success with them coming back.
Okay.
And I would see that new basal growth at the base of the stem, and that's when I would cut the old stem out.
Uh-huh.
But your best, go to a reputable nursery or garden center this fall.
Yes.
Pick up some mums and plant the mums. The sooner you plant them, the better because they can get rooted in.
Right.
And make sure you adequately, you know, mulch them going through the winter months and just see what happens. But the mammoth mums, they were developed up at the University of Minnesota. Extremely, extremely, extremely hardy.
Cold.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Ruth, here's what I'd like you to do is to keep listening. We're going to get our friend Todd from out at Baton's Nursery on the line right after we go, you know, when we go to break, and we're going to ask him that question, get some more information from Todd. So
okay,
keep listening.
I listen to you every Saturday.
Well, fantastic.
Like I said, when do they come into the nursery? Do you know when they start selling them?
A lot of growers are growing now. They're still in their young stages, early stages of development.
Right.
And there's a lot of growers throughout the tri-state area that are top quality mum growers.
Right.
And so right now they're in the midst of that. And the key to growing really good top quality mums, and when you go to the chain stores, I'm going to tell you this right now, you can tell a good mum from a bad mum. And when I say this, the mums that are taller and narrower, they were grown for numbers, quantity. They're not spaced. When they're adequately spaced in a right growing environment and the grower's doing the right thing, they'll have nice girth to them. They'll have nice symmetry, width. And that's what you want to look for when you're purchasing a mum. Buy from local growers and nurseries and garden centers. They're mums. They are not grown for numbers.
Right.
When they're tall and thin, they're grown just to get them out in mass production. They're not spaced properly. You can tell a difference.
So keep listening. We're going to get Todd from Baton's Nursery on the line right after the break, and we'll get an answer for you.
Okay. Thank you so much, y'all.
Thanks,
Ruth. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. Your local home and garden guys need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're going to be trying to get a hold of Steve or Todd out of Baton's to get an answer for you, Ruth. And maybe they're sleeping in after.
Wait, what do you want to? What do you want to answer for Ruth?
The question she asked.
Well, see, you could probably sow mum seed, but again, most of those are done with cuttings.
The question she had was, how do you know whether they're hardy seed?
Well,
what does that mean?
Well, mums aren't even classified as being hardy anymore.
Okay.
That's a fact. You know,
Jack,
I'm just setting you up. But we used to call them hardy mums all the time.
Yeah.
However, there's a lot of times they just die out.
Was that like a brand name or something?
No, not at all. It was treated as a perennial, but anymore we don't treat them as perennials.
Ah, okay.
So that's where that lies. As a matter of fact, you know, it's a crapshoot. But the only one that's truly, truly, truly hardy are the mammoths. Mm. I mean, without a question.
Gotcha.
Now, the other thing, if you're growing mums, and there's people who have mums and they've had them for years.
Yeah.
And again, as we've hybridized different varieties over the years, I think we've sacrificed some hardiness.
What about those who all have mums that are in the ground from last year or
every week? That could be very well the case. And a lot of times, when you plant mums and are up close to the house or they're in a protected area, that's even better.
Right.
You know, because every area around our home has its own different microclimate. So that in itself, that really helps with things, you know, wintering over better than it would somewhere else out in the yard or out away from the house. Almost like crepe myrtles. You know, they're very similar. You know, the closer to the house, because they're a little bit more temperamental, we're about as far north as you can bring them. They can be subject to some serious cold winter damage.
Gotcha.
They were back in 2012, as a matter of fact. And then the following year, if you remember 2013, I planted a tree form crepe myrtle.
Mm-hmm.
And I was betting that we wouldn't have the same kind of cold temperatures we did the prior season.
And
what happened? We did.
Yeah.
Once you get down around -8, -10, a night or two or whatever in a row or in succession.
Uh-huh.
It's like,
forget it.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
It's Russian roulette right there. And my crepe myrtle tree died back to the ground like an herbaceous plant.
Yeah.
Came back as a shrub.
Wow.
So, but anyway, that's that in a nutshell for the most part. But those who have mums in their landscape, just as you stated from last year or 2 years ago or 3 years ago, excuse me. You want to pinch those back a couple of times as you're going through the spring and early part of summer.
My question is, when do you do that?
You'll do that early spring, you know, sometime in mid-spring or so, late spring.
Mm-hmm.
The last time you pinch those back is around July 4th weekend.
Okay.
So from this point forth,
leave them
alone. Let them go. And they're going to set up and bloom for you later in the season. Or if not, they're going to bloom earlier.
Mm-hmm. Is there any sort of fertilizing going on here with them getting them ready?
You can always fertilize. I mean, most of your plants, they appreciate a little feeding, just like you.
Yeah.
It's like going to the refrigerator for those guys. But you got to get something good out of the refrigerator, something that's not been in there too long, something that's going stale. So you need to use good fertilizers.
Yeah.
You're cutting up, right? You like that. Just like you.
I do enjoy a little good food now and then.
Yeah. You know, and
speaking of food, you said you had a new recipe.
It's not a new recipe, but I'm a big Bobby Flay fan.
Uh-huh.
So this past week.
Yeah, a wrestler?
Yeah, he's a wrestler.
It's just a joke. I'm just joking.
Well, no,
he's on a restaurant in town here somewhere, or at the casino?
You know, he does, over at the casino.
Yeah.
The former Horseshoe, which is now Jack.
Yeah.
When did they do that?
About 3 weeks ago, maybe. Closed it for a day or two.
I'm going to see Jack.
Yeah.
But, I did, as a matter of fact, and I used this recipe. Boy, we're really switching gears here, but I'm hungry this morning, yeah. So. I did this with shrimp the other day, and I did this on a grill. But I just got out a food processor. I threw in a couple shallots I had diced up, a quarter cup or so of soy sauce, a little peanut oil. What else I put in there? Garlic, scallions, and what else? I don't know, a couple other things. And I just ran it all together. Oh, fresh ginger, too.
Okay.
And I marinated the shrimp in this, put it on the grill. Oh, my gosh. But the key is when you put shrimp on the grill.
What is the key when you put it on the bobby?
On the bobby. You do not leave it on there too long.
Uh-huh.
I was about a minute and a half to 2 minutes max per side.
Ooh, really?
It is. You got to man the grill.
Okay.
I know you can't do that, but you have to man the grill. And also, I had lime juice in there and sugar, too. That helped caramelize the coating on the outside of of the shrimp. Peeled it back. It was to die for.
So every just time, a couple of minutes on each side?
Yes. Hmm. Yes. And then I put scallions on top. When I was finished, I got it off the grill. Little lime juice. And it was like finger licking good. Because after you eat the shrimp, I'm telling you, I was licking my fingers.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't get enough of that.
So where'd you get you get some great big jumbo shrimp? Is that what you're talking about?
Okay. Oh, and I tell you what, over at Lucan's, they have some gigantic, like colossal shrimp to die for.
Ginormous shrimp.
Colossal. Colossal. But anyway, the key is, we need a female that's good looking and knows how to cook to come in here and talk about this stuff with
us. In that order.
Oh, in that order. In that order. Because the best way to a man's heart is through his stomach. And if you don't like good food like that,
yep.
But I'm a Bobby Flay fan, and it's all, in my eyes, it's all about the sauce. Now, I did scallops last Monday with a cilantro pesto that was to die for.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You got to tell me a little bit more about that.
I'll tell you a little bit more about that.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Get it around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and covering a lot of ground today and going from the farm to the table, so to speak.
Ooh,
Tony is worked up about some of his recipes.
You know, as a matter of fact,
that's good.
When I, they're not my recipes, and then a lot of times I'll alter things, change it up a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And I just been recently, you know, as we've come to a little bit of a slow period with the garden center and all, I have had a little bit more time to.
A little time off?
Well, not a little
not
time
off.
A little bit more time to do more
catch
grilling.
Your breath.
So, and I know you don't like to grill. Do you have that photograph, or do I need to put it on where you are at the grill on Facebook?
I do have it. I'll look it up and get it.
I'll
on
put it on Facebook. I don't want everybody to see those chicken legs of yours.
better legs in a bucket of chicken. Is that how you put
that's
that?
That's what I said. And I've seen a better pair of legs than a bucket of KFC chicken.
I'll check that out and find out where that is.
You know, I was telling you about that, cilantro pesto.
Uh-huh.
And you'll do that with jalapeno peppers, but you have to first grill the jalapeno peppers and char them on the grill. Then when you pull them off of the grill, put them in a brown paper bag, let them cool down. Then you peel the skin off, you'll de-seed those. And you don't have to, you know, de-seed it or seed it, however you want to call that. What's proper there? Seed it? De-seed it? It's seeded.
Yeah.
I guess.
Right.
Anyway.
Remove
the seeds. Thank you. And then just put that in a food processor with cilantro, a little olive oil. You can use pine nuts. You can use pecan nuts. You can use walnuts. And just process that in a food processor and ladle that over scallops. And it's to die for. Just gives a little bit of, it's almost like a smoky heat. But very tasty, to say the least. I like seafood. You like seafood?
I do. Yep. I'm a fish guy.
You know what? When I was up at... do you like oysters?
No. Mm. No. Mm-hmm.
You know, I was when we were up in New York just a few weeks ago.
It made me shiver just thinking about
them. Well, I got to tell you about these oysters I had. They were there's a difference between oysters. Now, I'm not an oyster guru, but we were at this oyster bar in Grand Central Station in New York. And then they had this big table, and there's like four guys up there just shucking those oysters. And that's not an easy job.
No.
You got to know what you're doing, or you'll take a little sharp knife or a tool into the hand. But I had these Pemaquid oysters, and I never had them with vinegar. But it was really good. A little cocktail sauce vinegar and fresh grated horseradish. And they were to die for. They really were. I only had like four of the Pemaquid, but they were really large.
Huh.
A lot larger, almost twice the size of other oysters. There's so many different oysters, it's incredible.
Right.
Now, I don't know if it's true. They always say you should only eat oysters in a month that has an R in it. Have you ever heard that? Like January, February, March.
I have not.
April, like May. You never heard that?
Uh-uh.
I don't know if that's true or not. And, you know, I don't know if they're really truly an aphrodisiac either. Have you heard that?
I did hear that. Yeah.
You may want to oyster up.
Yeah, I think I'll just pass.
But you're right. You know, that farm-to-table movement. Get out, you know, visit some of your local farmers markets and so forth. I understand, Ernie, there's a great one out there in Erlanger, right there on Commonwealth at the church.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know the name of that church, and I've never been there, but I understand that's really a good one. Huh. Obviously, I like to go to Findlay, you know, as often as I can. I also like to go over to the farmers market at Lunkin Airport. That's always a good one.
Yeah.
But I don't know. And have you ever been over to, and I know there's a lot of restaurants, and I don't know all the restaurants, and maybe this might be a good show topic down the road, but over in Covington, Main Bite, you have Otto's. They are types of restaurants that will, you know, participate and work with local growers, and it's all organic, sure. It's clean stuff.
Sure.
And you were just mentioning another great place over in Northern Kentucky, Greyhound Grill.
Yeah.
You know, Butch Wainscott and his family, they do a great job over there at Greyhound. That's been there for a number of years. And if you've never been there, you know, you got to stop in. I love their onion rings.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
those are the
I had those for the first time a couple of weeks ago. Another couple went with us over there. And she goes, oh, you got to try these. Plate was huge. The onion rings were gigantic.
They just, you know, you just... You want to get your picture taken next to him, don't you?
It always cracks me up when somebody says, almost looks too good to eat. I haven't run across anything like that.
They really,
do.
And you had mentioned that they're going to start participating in the farm. You know,
I did see that in the paper yesterday.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And looking forward to that.
And I understand. My dad was telling me that they're also looking to do some outdoor kind of patio seating and so forth.
Wonderful.
Makes it nice.
It does. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Got a lot of ground to cover today, and we need to pause. We'll be right back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. It's time once again to check in with our friend Jerry out at Watson to find out what's going on with patio furniture.
Probably the biggest thing, Ernie, is the cushions have changed everything on patio furniture. Over the past 35 years, manufacturers come up with some of the most durable fabrics, colorful cushions possible.
Right.
It's Umbrella. I don't know if you've ever heard of that fabric.
No.
That's the one that did it. It's made in the mountains of North Carolina, and I'll tell you what, it is worth every penny. You can put straight bleach on this fabric. That's how good it is.
And made in the USA, you just can't get any better than that.
Exactly. You can clean this stuff with Dawn and water. I bet 3/4 of the furniture we sell now goes out with cushions.
Mm-hmm.
People put it everywhere.
Yeah.
Not just undercover, they put it everywhere.
You know, that's fantastic news because, you know, when you start on your patio, you want it to be an extension of your house. But these cushions, it's just pretty inviting, isn't it?
Oh, it is. What the frames are made out of, most of them are aluminum. That's what lasts the longest.
Mm-hmm.
And they put cushions on top of them, or slings on top of them, or this resin wicker. Resin wicker is still going over an aluminum frame.
Wow.
You don't want to put it over steel. It won't last as long.
Yeah.
But the resin will.
I think that was probably one of the big drawbacks to a lot of early patio furniture was it set out there and then got, you know, looking bad or rough. And everybody sort of stood around, didn't want to set on it. But with this resin wicker, it's got to last forever and look good for it.
It is. It's good. Teak, we still sell a fair amount of teak furniture. There's some maintenance with it if you don't want it to turn gray.
Mm-hmm.
A good aluminum frame will last you 30 years or more.
Wow.
It can be cast or extruded with finish, and it's like finishes are getting better every year.
Oh, yeah.
The automobile finishes, how they're going on. Same's true with the patio furniture. Wicker frames, they add a lot of ultraviolet stabilizers. That's why you see so many different price ranges in it, the longer it'll last in the sun. The one thing I'm going to tell everybody, though, Ernie, is no pressure washing. That's not good for furniture. I've seen too much furniture. You want to clean it with a pressure washer, and I've seen it where it takes the finish right off of it or cuts through the wicker, so don't do that.
You can almost hear somebody go, I'll get that clean for you, honey. Hold on a minute.
Yeah.
And then they wind up throwing it away.
Absolutely. Cushions should last you 10 years or more if they're good ones.
Mm-hmm.
And slings on the furniture should last you 13 to 15 years that way. It's amazing. I know what I tell my customers is, like, when you first come in our store, we've got easily 100 different styles here.
Mm-hmm.
People get a little confused. I'll tell them, make sure you get two chairs out there that you're comfortable in, and that'll get you to start using that space. And everything else will work around it that way.
You've hit the nail on the head there. My wife, Lisa, and I absolutely love nothing more than sitting on our porch. By doing that, then these other ideas start to surface. And you know what would look good here? And, you know, I think I'd like to have one of these. The comfortable chairs that you're going to spend your time in are the key.
Yep, it sure is. Tell you what, here's what I noticed the other day, Ernie. Real estate listings are now starting to show the square footage of outdoor space that are available in homes.
Wow.
If that doesn't say how much we're all going outside,
uh-huh,
starting to use that space now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's our fastest growing category here at Watson's. I mean, and it won't stop. It just keeps going and going.
Which makes you happy and smiling.
It sure does. It sure does.
Well, if you want to put a happy smile on your wife's face, or just get one of those areas where you just sit down, and I think this one friend of mine calls for Zen Place, make sure you get to Watson's. And Jerry, give us some contact information and how they can get to you and your website.
Well, we're right here on Sharon Road, right where Mostella runs into it on the north side of Cincinnati. Website, Watson's.com. Everything we sell on it. Got some good sales going on right now, Ernie.
Well, tell me about those, too. What else is going on there?
Well, this time of year, we're just getting ready to go into our tent sale. That's going to start Monday. And boy, there's some values out there. There's going to be a huge tent in front of the store. That's where we get rid of what we have to get rid of.
Uh-huh.
Boy, we've got a good inventory, so it's not like you're missing anything as far as style.
Good, but it's a great time to save a little money, get out there, and get great selection.
Absolutely.
But Jerry, thank you so much for spending a little time with us here at In and Around the House, and I'm glad you're happy about everything going on there at Watson's, and I know our customers and our clients are going to make their way there. They're going to be happy when they leave.
We appreciate it, Ernie. Thanks so much.
Yeah, the tent sale gets underway on Monday.
Not a bad deal.
Man, you got to get a chance. Get out there.
You know, outdoor furniture, I agree with Jerry. That's it's a big thing right now with homeowners. And last year, Tina and I, we invested quite a bit in some outdoor furniture for our deck.
Mm-hmm.
And he hit the nail on the head, too, Ernie. I don't know how familiar that you are with Sunbrella material. It's top quality stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you said you had an umbrella that blew away, and when you recovered it, no damage?
It was all intact, and the material on it was Sunbrella, so it went up like a kite. Up over, it was on our deck, up, this was about a week and a half or so ago,
yeah,
up over the back sunroom into the neighbor's yard.
Hmm.
But outdoor furniture just makes that whole outdoor living come together.
It surely does.
It really does. What was it that you did a couple years ago, a little repurposing? You found some...
Oh, the patio, when we re-poured the patio.
Well, you found some furniture, yeah.
Yeah, and reconditioned it and put it out there, and just makes the world a difference. Late in the afternoon, we find that's exactly where we gravitate to,
mm-hmm,
is down on that patio, sitting, mm-hmm, in the back, watching the birds.
Right.
And as Jerry from Watson's pointed out, it creates an extension of your house. You know, everybody wants to enjoy that part of their home all season long, you know, for the most part, spring, summer, fall, and then, you know, go in when it's bitterly cold outside.
Right. You know, he said something, too, that I thought was very interesting, is that now some of the real estate agents are listing homes and using that outdoor space as part of the, maybe some of the square footage or the other amenities of a home.
I couldn't agree more.
So that's one of those things, too, that will really sell your home quickly, in addition to having nice landscape and that curb appeal. But it all comes together. It all ties into one. And it just makes that nice backdoor oasis you know, outside. We need it.
I love the fact that he said, too, that, you know, find two comfortable chairs. Because if
you build around it.
And build around them. Because that's exactly what Lisa and I did. We, you know, my mom, many, many, many years ago, had given me that, I think, I can't remember what it's called, Paul Bunyan type rocker. It's Ernie Brown size, as Lisa says. And then our friend Buck gave us one for her. We sit in them all the time. And sitting on that patio and looking into the backyard, that's what led to those ideas about, well, we want to do this here, or want to move the bird bath over here. We want to put the tables there. So make sure you take the time. Go out and see our friend Jerry from Watson's or Tinsdale. Starts on Monday, I believe he said. And we'll double check that to make certain, but I think so. And get out and get something done in your yard. Create a space where you can have your zen moments there. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Going to be a great day to get some stuff done in and around your house. The humidity's moved out. Temperatures will hover right around the mid-80s. And we will see a mixture of sun and clouds today. It will be warmer still on Sunday, with a high right around 88. And, Tony, a lot of things, you know, we went out to visit our friend Jesse Tack, who does afternoons here on B105, to take a look at his yard. And just as a little snapshot of some of the issues he was having, he said he was had a drainage issue, and we discovered what some of that was. But he also had some grass issues that a lot of our listeners are probably battling through the same thing.
He had a lot of stuff going on, and that was a perfect example. And I know that when we get that kind of put together, the video of his backyard, you know, he expressed some concerns over, you know, pooling water and so forth. But a lot of that had to do with, when you pointed out right off the bat, you know, the one downspout where everything just takes everything off of his roof, you know, especially if you're getting heavy rains and it comes down to one concentrated area. But the problem is, and this is why we talk about this often, you know, he had at one time, maybe not Jesse, maybe the prior owner that lived in his house, three or four big trees back there.
Right.
And that was evident as we walked in his backyard, very, very uneven, and in a lot of situations there, actually unsafe, because you could break or twist an ankle rather easily.
When he stepped down, then he goes, this is the one that gets to me quite often. He goes, I normally see him, but when I'm mowing the grass, I go to step off to the side or off to the back. I thought you could break an ankle there in a minute.
Quickly. And, you know, that has a lot to do with when we talk about removing large trees, and when you take those trees down, how important it is to grind out that stump.
I thought that that was very timely, and not something that I would have paid much attention to, because when you explain to him what happens there, how that root system dies,
It starts to decay underground. And as it decays, it forms these little caverns, you know, these voids. And as you get those torrential downpours or those rains, or over time, you get that settling. You know, those voids will collapse.
Yeah.
And as they collapse, you can't see that on top of the, you know, from the surface. But as they collapse, you know, you have these ruts. You have this, a lot of the unevenness.
Right.
And that's where, when you take out trees, get that stuff out.
Sure.
Come back in and fill in. He's got a little bit of work ahead of himself. There's no doubt about it. I would try and loosen up some of those areas, get a spud bar, start pushing down to find those voids, bring in some topsoil from Hafner's, and go at it. But
we shot a little video there, and we're going to edit that together, and you'll be able to see that on our Facebook page here sometime in the next week or so. But there were a couple of different grasses in there that you explained to him.
Oh, he had a lot of stuff in there. Well, you could see at one time, you know, as he had trees, obviously trees, you know, they provide a lot of shade. And when you're trying to establish grass under those large shade trees, it gets a little difficult. And you can see the different textures of those grasses that are more shade-oriented.
Right.
You can see how thin they were,
right,
the blade,
mm-hmm,
versus some of the other fescues that was in the yard on the outer outskirts.
Sure.
Closer to the fences.
Yeah.
Also had crabgrass, just a little bit of everything in there.
And when he asked you, what should we do about this, you know, he's in that position where it's the middle of summer, and there are a couple of different avenues of action, as you pointed out.
I think right now for Jesse, and we're talking about Jesse Tack, he does the afternoon show with Amanda, and is getting the yard level again.
Right.
He really does not have a low spot. Everything's, you know, it's moving underground, and mm-hmm, it's pooling back there.
Right.
And that's where that issue's coming from. First and foremost, bring soil in and get things fixed from, you know, just grading it out.
Right. Now, should he go ahead and kill some of that grass?
I would. And as we get into August, every homeowner that's, you know, that is in need of repairing their lawn or wanting to do a major renovation or fix some areas that are troubled,
mm-hmm,
August is the time to start killing things.
And you don't want to do it like our friend Robin Tidwell, who got bobcat.
Well, now she was, obviously she had some equipment at her disposal there, at her fingertips, and she went at it and knocked it out. Not everybody has that luxury.
Right.
However,
right,
you know, be ready to turn the corner when you get into September. So I want people to start thinking about, you know, what is it that you need to do? Identify that.
Mm-hmm.
Come up with a game plan. And getting your lawn established and growing grass is not difficult. It's all about timing. I say it all the time. You know, Joey Votto's a good hitter. It's timing. You know, those guys that play baseball can hit the long ball, the home run. It's timing.
Right.
And the same applies with establishing a lawn or growing grass.
Mm-hmm. So he has a couple of weeks where he can go ahead and get some of this stuff eradicated.
Absolutely.
Get it out of there and then start hauling in some topsoil and some dirt. And one of the things, again, you pointed out, which was great information, is go to a reputable place to get the topsoil.
Well, when you just buy topsoil to be buying topsoil, I don't care if it's from a, you know, if it's bulk or if it's bag, know what it is. Because once you start sowing grass seed, keep this in mind. A lot of stuff that's excavated and new subdivision developments and so forth,
right,
a lot of times those guys, you know, they want to get rid of some of that soil, and there are other places that are willing to take it. They shred it up. It's really nice. But guess what? You're getting a lot of that top layer. And in that top layer, there's a lot of weed seed that's never seen the light of day.
Right.
And once it does, it's like, whoa. So it's growing up amongst the newly sown grass seed that you have down.
Like a wake-up call for them.
And this is what most homeowners will think. The grass seed that I bought was junk.
Mm-hmm.
That is the furthest from the truth. You need to go back and look at, where did I get the soil from?
Exactly. And what might be in there.
And what may be in there.
That's,
you know, if you want to buy 99 cents worth of topsoil in a small bag, that's what you're going to get.
And $100 worth of work.
It's muck. I hear it all the time.
Yeah.
When I first, this is no kidding, back in 2000, when I left the corporate world and came back to help my dad in the garden center, he had some of that inexpensive topsoil. And I'm like, chuck it, Dad.
Yeah.
Get it out of there.
Right.
Because I'm willing to help people with a better product than to just sell them something that's cheap on the wallet.
Sure.
You know, because you always have to come back and do it again.
Right, right. So one of the other things that we talked about at Jesse's, apparently the previous homeowner had some holly bushes in the back.
Yes, and it was funny because I like to quiz you on some of those things.
And, you do.
And you were like, I'd move these back here. And I'm like, I wouldn't, and you give me all the money in the world, and I wouldn't move them back there.
Right.
Those were inkberry hollies.
Okay, and explain to me why that's not a...
Well...
It's a junk plant? Or
well, I'm not going to say it's a junk shrub. It is one that it's used in mass plantings to where somebody's on the cheap and doesn't want to spend the money for good stuff.
It just takes up
and
space.
You'll see it. You'll see those. And I'm not, you know, I'm not badgering the inkberry holly by any means. But, you know, they're out in the islands in shopping centers and stuff like that. Or they might run a row of those 40 or 50 in a grouping.
Uh-huh.
And over time, they just look a little sparse down below. Actually, he had three there, and one was horrible. The two were, and that's okay. You know, that's not Jesse's thing.
No. Let's put three of them in there and hope two of them.
But you're like, you were like, what I would. You were Mr. Professional. You're moving your arms, Jess. If I were you, this is how I'd attack this. What I would move those back here, and I'm like, I junk them.
Yeah,
but he has a great. You know, he really has a nice backyard to where if now, again, I don't know what Jesse likes to do, and this is not the Jesse show by any means, but he's got a clean slate. To start new.
Yeah.
And he could do some wonderful raised beds.
Uh-huh.
A lot of things back there.
A little gravel area with a bird feeder, a bird bath, you know, stepping stones.
You know, something else that was interesting about Jesse's house there, there was not a back door, was there?
You know, I think you're right. There are two side doors.
Yeah, the only access to his backyard was around the side.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, as I think about that, that's very interesting because I'm thinking a deck. I'm thinking a patio.
Yeah.
And now I'm thinking I'd blow one of those walls out and put a door.
Uh-huh. It might be a little more than what he's thinking about, but I did suggest a deck back there. As soon as you said that, I realized that there isn't a back door.
There is not a back door.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So, therefore, I can see Jesse, it's like out of sight, out of mind,
mm-hmm.
until he mows the grass, and then he breaks an ankle. Then he has to hobble in here and do the afternoon show.
But a lot of our listeners might be in a similar situation where they have some of that those grasses, unwanted grasses coming into their yard, and you just sort of have to bite the bullet for another couple of weeks.
You do. Right? And, you know, now, Jesse's yard is not that bad from a turf element.
No.
I mean, he has some crabgrass in there. And here's the other thing. You know, this weekend, temperatures are really good. They're conducive for perhaps, you know, getting rid of some things in the lawn.
Sure.
However, when we start pushing the envelope and, you know, 85 to 90, you know, that's
right.
That's, you know, that's a little scary because sometimes you can injure the turf.
Sure.
As you're trying to get rid of some of those unwanted broadleaf weeds.
Yep. Agreed. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Plenty of ways to stay connected with us. Make sure you take the time to jump onto our Facebook page, and you can post pictures, pose questions, and we'll get back to you. You can also email us at inandaroundthehouse@b105.com. We've got a lot of ground to cover. It's going to be a beautiful day, a mixture of sun and clouds, high temperature right around 84, 85 today, a little warmer tomorrow. But still mixture of sun and clouds, lower humidity, and a beautiful weekend to get some work done around your house. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Got a lot of ground to cover today. It is going to be beautiful. Just gave you the forecast a few minutes ago. And again, don't forget to check out our Facebook page. We've spent a lot of time visiting our local leaders over the last month or so. And you can jump in and check out some of their places and some of their operations. And we're going to try to keep you informed and ready to rock, so to speak, as we this summer just seems to be flying by. I can't believe it's already the middle of July.
It's hard to believe. I'm with you. You know, and this is, I always say it, when you're in July and August, it's maintenance mode.
It is. You know, you worked very hard to get a lot of stuff done, and now you have to maintain it or you're going to wind up getting behind it.
Most definitely. You know, something else I want to throw out there is I want to ask, you know, our audience, what's doing well in your landscape? What's doing well in your window boxes? You know, share some of those things with us. What isn't doing well? And maybe we can hone in on it. But, you know, right now, Ernie, for the first time in a long time, and I love this particular plant. I love Lantana. And you can't beat Lantana. It's just blooming its head off in our window boxes and our pots and containers, and it just loves the heat. You can't throw enough heat its way.
Good. Hey, Tony, we have Rob from Fairfield on the line who has some lawn issues, and we're going to try to help him out now. What kind of problems are you having, Rob?
Well, we had a sewer line replaced.
Oh, boy.
And I just want to know, because it's been a couple of years ago. I want to know where to start because I still got the hump in my lawn.
Okay. That was going to be my question because we have a similar thing happen to us several years ago, and it takes quite a while for that to settle, and it may not settle completely. You may have to move some of that dirt around.
Yeah, most definitely. You need to grade that out and get that leveled out and just be ready to go after it, towards the end of August, going right into the beginning of September. And if you do that, you get things prepped between now and the beginning of September and have the grass seed down, you will be rewarded very well, handsomely, with your efforts.
Now, is there a place, Rob, that you can shovel this out? Can you take it somewhere else and use it to level some part of your grass or lawn, out?
Well, I was going to, yes, I do. I was wanting to get, where's the best place to get topsoil?
Bar none, Hafner's. Hafner's and Sons. And, yes, H. Hafner's and Sons, they have top quality topsoil. And, let them know what you're doing. And they have various types of topsoil. They have, just tell them you're sowing grass seed. You want something as clean as possible. And that's where I'd start. Get that graded out to where things are level. And, if that means a little elbow grease on your part, most definitely do it. And just get things to where they need to be. And at the end of August, going right into the beginning of September, be ready to sow grass seed.
Okay.
And you'll be rewarded well. That gives you all of September, and that will give you all of October to get a couple of mowings on your newly, your newly seeded lawn. And that's going to help harden things off. And that's going to harden your grass off to go in through the winter months. And okay. At that time, too, how big of an area is this?
It's not very big. I live on a postage stamp lot.
Okay, it's manageable. There you go. And, another little tip. When you're sowing grass seed and it's totally bare, on average, a lot of seed companies have different ratios. You're going to spread about, 4 to 8 pounds per 1,000 square feet, maybe 5 to 10, if it's bare. If you're overseeding, it's half of that rate per 1,000 square feet, just on average.
And, Rob, they're not really far from you. They're at 5445 Wooster. They're in Cincinnati, 45226, if you need to put it in your GPS. And here's their phone number, 321-1895.
Okay.
That's Hafner's, yeah. That's where I'd start, Rob, and follow up with us. Take some before and after photos.
Okay. I'll send them to you on Facebook.
Perfect. We'd love to see that. Do some before and after, and just when you get all that set up, use a good tall fescue and go at it.
Yeah, now, one thing that Tony always points out, too, is when you do put the grass seed down, you want to cover it with hay or straw.
Straw.
You've got to leave a little area there. You can't cover it completely or you're going to be defeating the purpose.
About 40% coverage ratio or so. I want you to be able to look down and see soil. Yeah, I want you to be able to see through the straw. Don't cover it too heavily.
Okay.
All right.
You guys are awesome. I love listening to your show.
Well, thank you. Thanks, we appreciate that.
Thank you.
All right. A good weekend.
Uh-huh.
Bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Some key information there is that, a lot of times, and I have to admit, many years ago, I was guilty of this. It was the old spread the seed and then cover it so the birds wouldn't come get it, and that defeats the purpose. Then you wind up having straw there forever.
I was at someone's house the other day, and they had purchased a few plants from us and a couple of different shrubs and trees. And it's a new development. The home was just recently built, and their lawn's coming in really nice. Although summer's the most difficult time to establish a lawn, you just have to stay on it watering. That's what's really important.
Mm-hmm.
But what was funny is just in a day and a half's time, some bird, I don't know what type of bird it was, had already built a nest in one of the shrubs just from the straw, So they're more out to go and get the straw and roost with it or build nest with it versus trying to eat all that little seed. So,
somebody left building supplies here.
That's right.
Just pick all this stuff up right here. So I'm looking forward to seeing his photos and following along because I know he's got some work cut out for him to shovel that around and to get that evened out. just a little bit.
Right. You know, it just takes a little work. It takes a little time. And it's actually finding the time some, you know, often to make some of those areas, you know, where you improve them to make them better.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where I run into trouble is, do I have the time?
Right. And I noticed you posted on our Facebook page about Nuts Edge.
Yeah, that's another. Oh, I'm seeing actually.
Me too.
As a matter of fact, it is. You know, I always say this, Ernie. It's not a one and done kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It can take a couple of seasons to really get it under control.
Sure.
I, for the first time, have it extremely under control. I mean, it's taken a little while because I was getting it in different areas.
Right.
I only have one little spot where it's reared its ugly face.
Ooh. Okay.
Now, keep in mind, when you go after Nuts Edge, there's a number of things that come into play here for you to be totally effective getting rid of it. And when we talk about Nuts Edge, it's so easy to identify in the lawn. One is it's a light green color. It's totally different in color versus what the rest of the turf typically looks like.
Right.
And another telltale sign of what it is, once you mow your lawn, 2 days later or so, you see where it's outpaced the rest of the turf or the grass from a growth rate standpoint, because it just races.
I see. I mean, this it's a little bit of a joke, but you know, before you get the mower put away, it's peeking up over the grass.
Yeah, there's probably some truth to that. There's probably a lot of truth to that, as a matter of fact.
I have a little bit of a patch right where we used to have a pile of that firewood that we split up. We had it stacked fairly close to the patio and then moved it and needed to put some seed down, and we just didn't get it down quick enough. That stuff, it almost took over right where that firewood was.
You know, if in fact, I tell you what, it can take over a lawn quickly.
Oh, yeah.
It really does. But what you need to really take into consideration here is, if you're going to go after it in the right way. You know, do not mow your grass 2 days before you apply any products, nor 2 days after you apply the product.
Mm.
The more blade surface that you have to go after, the better. A lot of times, a lot of guys think, oh, I'm going to scalp the lawn, or I'm going to scalp these weeds, or I'm going to scalp what it is. And when I say scalp, I mean cut it close to the ground and then spray it. The truth of the matter, fact or fiction, you know, we were talking about that earlier. The fact is this, the less surface that there is for that product to get onto, the less effective that it is.
I got you.
And don't waste your time, don't waste your money and, you know, your efforts. So the more of the broadleaf weed that's there, or the surface of the blade, in the case we're talking about Nuts Edge, the more effective that you're going to be. Secondly, what's very, very important about going after Nuts Edge, when you use Nuts Edge Killer from High Yield, it's a great product. Comes in a box, probably $15 to $20. It will mix up exactly 1 gallon. And when you open that box up, I want to caution you of this. There's a little cellophane packet in there with the product inside the cellophane packet. You do not have to open up the cellophane packet. It will dissolve.
Oh.
So you just simply place that into your tank sprayer. Mix with it exactly 1 gallon of water, stir it up thoroughly. Once you're finished, you need to add a surfactant to it, a spreader sticker. Again, you can buy that. It's a high yield product, probably like $5. You're only going to use 2 teaspoons per gallon of water per mixture. That's all you need. Agitate it. That is going to help with the absorption. It's going to help facilitate and get that product into the Nuts Edge grass, the blade. The spreader sticker is going to help it stick to it better without it repelling off of it because it's waxy.
Right.
And you're going to be more successful that way than you are not using that surfactant. I'm telling you, it's night and day. It's very important that you use a spreader sticker, or you're throwing $15-$20 out the door.
Sure. And that product is available at your
local home and garden centers, your nurseries. Just go there, pick up that product. It works extremely well. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the other thing I want to say real quick.
Like a bunny.
Like a bunny. Is that there's an intricate underground root structure to Nuts Edge.
I was noticing that on the diagram on our Facebook page.
And it's all these little baublets or nutlets. And Next year, you might see those. When you spray nuts edge, you primarily get the main plant. But next year, you might have some of these other nutlets emerge up from under the soil.
Gotcha.
And you're like, I sprayed there last year.
Right.
I know you did.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be a two-year process, maybe three. You got to stay with it. Do not pull it because it spreads more.
Ooh.
So don't pull it. And you can another identifier with it I wanted to touch base on is when you pull it, or if you're to look at it closely, the stem is triangular in shape. So it's light color. It's light green color.
Right.
It outpaces the rest of the lawn.
Uh-huh.
And the stem is triangular in shape.
Boy.
That's nuts edge.
You hit the nail on the head because that would have been the first thing I would have thought of was to reach down and pull up those, you know, two or three areas where it's annoying.
It spreads worse.
And that creates a bigger problem.
It does.
And we don't want that.
I don't. Not in the least.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And always a great way to stay connected with us is our Facebook page. Tony said, do we have a question there?
We do. And we were talking about moms a little earlier, and this is from Angie McGuire. And she's like, good morning, guys. My question concerns moms, of course. And she has three that she planted last fall, and they came back. She said they're huge. They're already blooming. And this is what we were talking about. And she was wanting to know, is there anything that she can do for them next year to get them to bloom closer to the fall season?
Oh, okay.
Absolutely, Angie. What you can do, we were talking about cutting them back, pinching them back a couple of times throughout the growing season. You'll do that sometime mid, you know, late spring. You know, you'll give them, you'll pinch them back for the first time.
Okay.
And the last time that you'll want to pinch those back is going to be around the July 4th weekend. And what you're doing there is you're putting off that bloom period. And so they'll bloom for you later in the fall.
Great.
So that's the key right there. So a great question. And also, did you notice that she said she planted those last fall and that they came back? I don't know the exact variety. However, you know, there's that element that they came back, and some people, they just don't come back for it all.
Right.
So, you know, a lot comes into play with moms. And, you know, again, they're shallow rooted. And when you plant those, the sooner you plant those in the landscape, once they get rooted in, the better. They're able to winter over a little easier than, you know, just being planted and all of a sudden you're in that cold spell and, you know, they start to slow down. So.
Right. That's a sure sign about the turning of the colors of the fall is those mums really start to burst open.
And honestly, I know we're in July talking about mums, but as fast as time flies by, Ernie, we'll be looking at the fall here just momentarily.
I just can't slow it down. I'm not trying to rush it, but we want you to be prepared.
That's like you are.
That's all we're trying to do here, our in and around the house is dedicated to just making sure you're prepared.
And, you know, I understand, too, we were talking last week about the vandalism that took place down in Covington there.
I wanted to ask you, have you heard anything else about
that? I really don't know if they found the vandals or the vandal, whoever it was that did this, but apparently they had a great fundraiser, very successful at getting, you know, some funds together to replant and replace those trees this upcoming fall season. So
then about the vandalism over at Covington,
right? It happened right there on Holman Street, and I can't believe it. But nonetheless, everybody came together as a community, and things are looking good, and we're going to replace those trees, and all that will be well.
Yes, because they're very important to the environment and our psyche, too. I mean, you know, especially in an urban environment, nothing better than especially old growth trees on a street or, you know, in a neighborhood really sort of sets the tone.
It does. You know, when we were at Jesse's house yesterday, the crab apple, I loved the structure of that tree that was in his front yard.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful structure.
Yeah.
And that caught my attention. That was the first thing that I noticed when we pulled up in his driveway.
Uh-huh.
And across the street was that beautiful old oak. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, trees are valuable, and I wish people would plant more shade trees.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about ornamental things today because we have a lot of space constraints. We have small gardening areas. Understandable. But boy, if you have an opportunity to plant a shade tree, and we were telling Jesse the same thing yesterday, that really, you know, Jesse's, that the backside of his house, it was taking the brunt of the sun.
Yeah.
A nice shade tree there would ease those electric bills, those utility bills. That is a benefit of trees as well. In addition to all the other good things, beauty, oxygen, there's so many important elements about trees and shrubs and so forth. I can't say it enough.
A lot of benefits.
A lot of benefits, right? That's for sure. So, what else is going on with you around a Brown household?
Well, we're excited about continuing that project downstairs. I finally got the time to rip out some more of that basement wall area. And this is how my brother Earl stopped by the house and asked him if I could borrow some power tools. And
Oh, wait a minute. Stop. He's asking you to borrow?
No, I asked to borrow a couple of his things. He's like my dad, or our dad. He's got everything you can imagine. And so I found myself where I needed to remove this old bedroom wall downstairs because we're moving it. We got the laundry room completed and still working on that bathroom project. But in order to continue the progress, I needed to remove an old wall downstairs in my bedroom. So,
Is he apprehensive about loaning you tools?
Oh, no, not at all.
No. Okay, I was just curious. I remember that time you told me that goofy story where you had a hammer drill in reverse and you couldn't figure it out.
Oh yeah,
duh,
boy,
like duh.
Yeah. Well,
duh.
I don't feel so bad because I've who was it we were talking? I was talking to a brother in the shrine. And the escort unit, who's does masonry and stuff, and he had a couple of guys working for him, and he went to pick up some product and came back and stood there for a few minutes watching him and said, "You only got two holes drilled?" And he stood there for a few minutes. "Yeah, this is not going well." And he goes, "Hang on just a minute." Jim put it in forward. So apparently it happens quite a bit. But
oh, wow.
But yeah, I got that drywall removed. I got the mess cleaned up, and I just have some studs left. And I had a plan in my mind.
I gotta stop you in midstream here.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a brother in the Masons.
Yeah,
you guys are Masons. Don't you know something about masonry?
Oh yeah,
and everything's in reverse.
Well, his workers were.
He hired some new people.
He's the one that came by and caught it. You know,
I just had to add that. Yeah, go ahead.
Some apprentice.
Proceed.
So I have to get this wall down, and I had in my mind this whole plan about how I want this set up. And Earl walks down and brings me the tool set, and he's going over a few things. I'm proud of my plan. Here's where this is going to go, and I'm going to build a closet here. And this is the part of growing up in the Brown household is, you know, you always preface things that, "I don't want to tell you what to do, but I just want to make this suggestion." And he said, "Why are you going to build another wall for a closet when you already have a wall here? Why don't you move your closet over here or put your closet here? That wall's already built, and all you have to do is frame it in and put the door in." I wish I'd have thought of that. Okay, that's fine. I got it now. I just didn't see it. You know how sometimes another set of eyes will help?
Well, two heads are better than one.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, in your case especially.
I was going to move the closet all the way across the bedroom, build two more walls, and have to frame that part in. And he said, "If you're just looking for a closet, you already have two walls here. You just need to put a door up."
Well, I thought you were, like, expanding to put, like, two king-size beds
No. But it's going to be a much bigger bedroom, but that whole thing of...
And you're in the basement?
In the basement.
You're in the basement.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's going to work out beautifully. I've been trying to get Lisa to come down so I could show her the new plan, and she kind of washed her hands of that. I'll tell you when I'll come down.
I think Lisa knows more than we all know. I got it. You know, you were talking about tools, and you were talking about borrowing your brother's tools and so forth. And when we began the show this morning, I was telling you that I was working a little bit in the backyard, and, you know, I had some trees that I had to take care of that had fallen, you know, a couple weeks ago, well, a week and a half ago. Well, I had this awesome, brand new, steel chainsaw.
Oh, this was your trip to our friend over at Bud Herbert.
Yes. Okay. And this is where I'm headed with this. Okay. I think it's a perfect lead in for it.
All right. Well, hold that thought. We do need to pause for a moment.
Okay, when we do that.
When we come back, we're going to hear Tony's story about his trip to our friend over at Bud Herbert Motors and the
chainsaw.
Cool incident. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, we need to pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. A little traveling music there from my buddy Ross and all my other buddies in the in the fraternity, rolling up to Middletown for some degree work today and listening to us at In and Around the House with your local home and garden guys. And before we get to your chainsaw story, we have our buddy the Birdman, Denny, on the line. Hey, Denny, how are you?
This is Chuck. I'm not Denny, but that'll work. So.
Well, okay.
How did we go from Denny to Chuck right there?
Well, I'm not sure, but
that's okay. What's going on?
Our producer said, is this Denny? Yeah. Okay. Well, Chuck, how are you?
Pretty good. I got a question for y'all. I got some Bradford pears trees got tore up during the big winds.
Oh, boy.
Yeah?
I actually had two of them snap all this, about 8-inch diameter, snapped them all about 4 foot, but I got about 3 or 4 more, split the middle out of them.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Anybody that stands next to one of those trees and sneezes could cause damage.
Yes. It's like I said, there's still branches on each side, but the middle's pretty much all gone. That's how much it's going to take down, or is there any luck of saving anything like that?
So. You know, Chuck, I tell you what I would do is just, this is one of those situations where you're going to want to drop back and punt because I would go ahead and clean the slate.
Yeah.
That particular tree, boy, it was used widely years ago. And it was a fast grower. It bloomed. It looked nice in the fall. You know, it was D, all the above. However, you know, we found out that genetically it's a weak tree. And because of that, you know, at some point in time, they're almost like, I always liken the Bradford pear to a house, you know, and termites. You know, there's two types of homes, one that has termites and the other one that's going to get them. The Bradford pear is kind of the same way. You know, it inevitably is going to break or it's going to get damaged somehow, some way in a windstorm, just as you've experienced. I would go ahead, have the trees removed, and I would start with a clean slate, and I would plant something else that is going to be quick to grow, provide some shade, yada, 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 whatever it is that you're looking for from a tree.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that happens with the Bradfords.
Okay, I got some water maples that are around the house. They're great shade trees. I mean, they're huge. I planted them years ago, and it's just truly amazing how much electric you save with a big shade tree around the house.
Oh, it immensely. You know, you talk about really saving some money on your utility bill. You're right. You get a little bit of shade there from those big trees. It's phenomenal.
It sure is. Like I said, I don't know what I do with that big shade tree. But I was kind of curious about them right there.
Yeah.
Just going to get it checked down.
I would go ahead and remove those. I really would. And you know.
When's the best time to trim a bread repair? I got some others up. That didn't get tore up. Would be a good time to trim.
Well, you know, I personally like to prune things when the foliage drops late in the year because you can see in there from a structural standpoint of what it is you want to take out without, you know, the leaves, you know, giving you a false representation of what you're removing or what you're leaving because once you make a cut, it's like you can't glue that back on or tape it on. It's forever. So it's that old Ross Perot approach. Measure twice, cut once.
That's right.
Those Bradford pears are best pruned right about ground level.
Yeah.
You know,
Mother Nature took care of most of that for me, so she did a lot of pruning for me.
And you know, Chuck, one other thing I want to touch on before we let you go is, are these in the front yard, side yard, backyard?
Actually, yes, they're in the front yard down towards the road. They're in between my house and the soybean field.
Okay. You know, we were just talking a little while ago about Jesse Tack. He's on the afternoon show with Jesse and Amanda.
Yes.
Or I might say Amanda and Jesse. I better watch how I say that. I'm just kidding. But Jesse had an issue. He has an issue facing him with trees that were removed in his backyard, and the stump was left behind. now that they're decaying, he's got all these voids, and it doesn't make for a nice, smooth, graded front lawn or part of your yard.
Yes.
Have the stump, you know, ground out and remove all the chips, and either plant grass seed or something else in its place.
Okay. Sounds great. I greatly appreciate your time, fellas.
Hey, that's okay. Take pictures and post them on our Facebook page. We love to follow along, see the progress.
Will do. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Chuck. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Tom on the line for Brookville with a white pine. A question of, it needs a little trimming, too. How big is it, Tom?
It's about 28 inches across the base.
Uh-huh.
And it's probably 18, 20 feet high. It came in, my wife brought it in, or the kids brought it in, like a little bitty sapling from school, I believe.
Wow.
And that was many years ago, and it's a beautiful tree, and I'd just like to trim it back around the bottom of it a little bit so I could mow in a little closer to it. Mm-hmm. So I'd get my head took off every time I get around it with a tractor.
Got it. I got a couple of those in Pappy's yard right next to us. When no one's looking, I'd trim a couple of those.
Yeah. Well, sounds like your white pine's doing really well, and secondly, it likes where it is. Now, when you go to cut back and remove some of those branches so you can get underneath it, you're going to see a little bleeding, a little sap oozing out from the cuts, and that's going to be expected.
Yeah.
And over time, they'll heal over. But use a really good top-quality pruning saw.
Okay.
You know, the pruning saw, and I'm going to talk more about this because I just picked up a real nice one the other day down at Bud Herbert Motors. The way they cut, you know, they're curved, and the way they cut, you know, unless the branches are so big and we use a chainsaw, but the way they cut, they'll cut in both directions, forward and as you stroke back.
Mm-hmm.
And it moves well through living tree branches, too, you know, that's green.
Yeah.
So that's a huge benefit. If the branches are of size, this is what else I want to caution you about. Start at the bottom of the branch underneath a few inches out, and I want you to put a nice light cut on the bottom side. And I'm going to tell you why. As you cut from the top down, what's going to happen is if the branches have some subsequent weight to them, they're going to peel. They're going to fall, and they're going to peel that bark back from the trunk, and you do not want that to happen.
Alrighty.
Putting that cut underneath will prevent that from happening.
All right.
And then make your final cut, you know, and stay right there where that collar is so it heals over better and quicker.
I doubt if I will be cutting anything even up to 2 inches.
Okay, that's fine. But still, it's always good to put that little cut there just in case, because you don't want to open that trunk up to anything other than what you're cutting so it heals quicker.
I don't know if there was a certain time I should be looking at.
Yeah, I would go ahead and prune it now. You know, you're not going to hurt it, you know, and nor have I ever seen somebody really lose anything because they pruned it at the, maybe not at the opportune time, so to speak. I mean, you're dealing with an evergreen here, you know, and, you know, things, you know, it's not like it's early in the spring where you have a lot more sap running,
you know,
as putting on new growth and so forth. So, you know, and you need to mow underneath it. So if that's the situation, then, definitely.
I just like to be able to get in a little closer to it without having to wrestle with all the limbs hit me in the face all the time.
You know, the other.
I heard my mom say one time, her dad was asked one time, when was the best time to prune fruit trees? And he told him when the knife was sharp.
Yeah, that's true. You know, that's like when's the best time to plant a tree? 10 years ago. A lot of truth to that.
I love that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Okay, I thought I'd give you a buzz and see what you had.
All right. Thank you so much for the call.
Have a good weekend. Bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, we'll get a chance to hear Tony's chainsaw story. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been talking a lot about trimming some trees. And it's important, as our last caller said, when to trim a tree, when the knife is sharp, or when you have a brand new steel chainsaw. So what happened there, old buddy, old pal?
Well, it's new, but in the sense that it's new from 2008. So I've never really fired it up.
Oh.
So it, having said that, it's been sitting in the basement since 08.
In the original box. It's a collector's item.
It's a collector's item. And, you know, and I'm sometimes I can be really guilty of things like that. I always, again, I buy things that I think I might end up using them at some point in time. But, however, I never really had to use my chainsaw. Unbeknownst to me, I never was aware that it had fuel in it. So somebody had fired it up back in 08. A friend of mine picked it up for me.
Right.
A good old boy named Jim Glassmeyer, and I know a lot of people know Jim Glassmeyer in the garden center industry and world, and Jim's a great guy, and he picked this up for me, and gosh, you know, I wasn't thinking much about it, and obviously since 08, so when I had the tree issue the other day with a couple of trees that had fallen, I'm like, oh man, I was jacked up, I was ready to fire that bad Oscar up, and lo and behold, you know, I'm thinking, okay, I mixed up a new thing of fuel, and there's some fuel in there. And I'm like, uh-oh, this is not good.
Right.
So I poured out the old fuel before I tried to crank it up. And it had, you know, you can smell fuel if you kind of get, if you know what you're doing. It had that varnish kind of odor to it. And I'm thinking, this is not good. This is not good. Anyway, so I thought, we'll give it a shot. So I drained the old fuel out, mixed the new fuel, you know, put it in, and did everything I need to do. And it's like, she's just not turning over. And I'm like, I was like a kid who had my baseball uniform all out and ready to go to play baseball that Saturday morning at 9:30, and it's pouring down rain.
Yeah.
I was just let down.
Well, what did you do next, Ernie?
Well, had a couple choice words to say, okay? Mumbled a few things.
That's typical.
And I thought, well, all right. So I went back down to the garden center. I knew we had an old, we have an electric chainsaw.
Old reliable.
That, you know, we use on a tree lot. Instead of a gas-powered, we use the electric because it always starts.
Sure.
But anyway, so I went that route. And just managed as best I could and, you know, pretty much got things cleaned up.
Sure, sure.
And my next door neighbor has a chainsaw, and I had probably about a 20-foot section left of tree that was quite thick, a little too big for the electric. And I said, Joe, if you don't mind helping me, because I don't like to borrow people's tools.
You've said that.
You know, and he was offering it up. I said, no, I'm going to roll this thing around, brace it, you just... We'll cut it up. But anyway, it was like taking the wind out of the sails for me.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's just, I was just, I'm like, man, I couldn't wait to fire that bad Oscar up.
Sure.
Whoa, you know, let it go. Took it down the next morning. Yeah, went down to Bud Herbert Motors with it. And I'm like, you know.
Did they ask you if it was mine?
No. Uh-uh. And while I was down there, you know, I purchased a nice pruning saw. I'm like, you know what? I'm in need of this. So, it was like an $80 pruning saw. It wasn't cheap. It was a nice one.
I can't take this in there and tell them what really happened.
Well, no, I did.
I buy something new.
I did. I did. And I, you know, I believe it was told Jim. I said, you know, it's been sitting in my basement since 08. I didn't know how long I had it, but I always keep my receipts and all my manuals together.
Sure.
I keep them in a binder. And I thought, wow. I didn't realize I had it that long.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was foolish of me just to let that go because the fuel will gel up.
It turns to varnish,
you know,
pretty much.
Oh. And, you know, I'm looking at the carburetor. I could smell the new fuel.
Yeah.
But it wasn't igniting with the plug.
Sure.
I was just like, you got to be kidding me.
Do they think they can salvage it or do you have to go buy another brand new one?
Oh, I hope it can be salvaged.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never...
Never been
the,
started.
The teeth are so sharp, they're sharper than your teeth. Yeah, I never cut anything with it.
Yeah.
But that is why, you know, and I jokingly say all the time, a fool with a tool is still a fool. That was really my fault.
Yeah.
I should have made sure that
part of that maintenance, tool maintenance plan. We do talk about that quite often. Every once in a while,
yep.
Spend a little time in your shed, reorganize everything.
I hear you.
You know?
And you know, now
listen to me, Tony. I'm trying to help you.
I know. You're trying to tell I'm trying to tell you something you should already know.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a minute. We'll be right back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. It's time once again to check in with our friend Jerry out at Watson to find out what's going on with patio furniture.
Probably the biggest thing, Ernie, is that cushions have changed everything on patio furniture. Over the past 35 years, manufacturers come up with some of the most durable fabrics, mm-hmm. colorful cushions possible.
Right.
This umbrella, I don't know if you've ever heard of that fabric.
No.
Oh, that's the one that did it. It's made in the mountains of North Carolina, and I'll tell you what, it is worth every penny. You can put straight bleach on this fabric. That's how good it is.
And made in the USA, you just can't get any better than that.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. You can clean this stuff with Dawn and water. I bet 3/4 of the furniture we sell now goes out with cushions.
Mm-hmm.
People put it everywhere.
Yeah.
Not just undercover, they put it everywhere.
You know, that's fantastic news because, you know, when you start on your patio, you want it to be an extension of your house. These cushions, it's just pretty inviting, isn't it?
Oh, it is. What the frames are made out of, most of them are aluminum. That's what lasts the longest.
Mm-hmm.
And they put cushions on top of them, or slings on top of them, or this resin wicker. Resin wicker. Are still going over an aluminum frame.
Wow.
You don't want to put it over steel. It won't last as long.
Yeah.
But the resin will.
I think that was probably one of the big drawbacks to a lot of early patio furniture was it set out there and then got, you know, looking bad or rough and everybody sort of stood around, didn't want to set on it. But with this resin wicker, it's got to last forever and look good for it.
It is. It's good. Teak, we still sell a fair amount of teak furniture. There's some maintenance with it if you don't want it to turn gray.
Mm-hmm.
A good aluminum frame will last you 30 years or more.
Wow.
It can be cast or extruded with finishes, and it's like finishes are getting better every year.
Oh, yeah.
Automobile finishes, how they're going on. Same's true with the patio furniture. Wicker frames, they add a lot of ultraviolet stabilizers. That's why you see so many different price ranges in it. The longer it'll last in the sun. The one thing I'm going to tell everybody, though, Ernie, is no pressure washing. It's not good for furniture. I've seen too much furniture. You want to clean it with a pressure washer, and I've seen it where it takes the finish right off of it or cuts through the wicker, so don't do that.
You can almost hear somebody go, I'll get that clean for you, honey. Hold on a minute. And then they wind up throwing it away.
Absolutely. Cushions should last you 10 years or more if they're good ones.
Mm-hmm.
And slings on the furniture should last you 13 to 15 years that way. It's amazing. I know what I tell my customers is, like, when you first come in our store, we've got easily 100 different styles here.
Mm-hmm.
People get a little confused. I'll tell them, make sure you get 2 chairs out there that you're comfortable in, and that'll get you to start using that space. And everything else will work around it that way.
You've hit the nail on the head there. My wife, Lisa, and I absolutely love nothing more than sitting on our porch. By doing that, then these other ideas start to surface. And you know what would look good here? And, you know, I think I'd like to have one of these. The comfortable chairs that you're going to spend your time in are the key.
Yep, it sure is. Tell you what, here's what I noticed the other day, Ernie. Real estate listings are now starting to show the square footage of outdoor space that are available in homes.
Wow.
If that doesn't say how much we're all going outside,
uh-huh.
starting to use that space now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's our fastest growing category here at Watson's. I mean, it's just, and it won't stop. It just keeps going and going.
Which makes you happy and smiling.
It sure does.
Well, if you want to put a happy smile on your wife's face or just get one of those areas where you just sit down, and I think this one friend of mine calls for Zen Place. Make sure you get to Watson's. And Jerry, give us some contact information on how they can get to you and your website.
Well, we're right here on Sharon Road, right where Mostella runs into it on the north side of Cincinnati. Website, Watson's.com. Everything we sell on it. Got some good sales going on right now, Ernie.
Well, tell me about those, too. What else is going on there?
Well, this time of year, we're just getting ready to go into our tent sale. That's going to start Monday. And boy, there are some values out there. There's going to be a huge tent in front of the store. That's where we get rid of what we have to get rid of.
Uh-huh.
Boy, we've got a good inventory, so it's not like you're missing anything as far as style.
Good, but it's a great time to save a little money, get out there, and great selection.
Absolutely.
But Jerry, thank you so much for spending a little time with us here at In and Around the House. And I'm glad you're happy about everything going on there at Watson's. And I know our customers and our clients are going to make their way there. They're going to be happy when they leave.
We appreciate it, Ernie. Thanks so much.
In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And going to be a great opportunity to stop out and see our friend Jerry out of Watson's. Or tent sale getting underway on Monday. And Tony, just checking our Facebook page, which is a great way to stay connected with us in and around the house. And we have a question from Joanne Tholmeyer. And I'll give this to you right as she says she has an area in her yard, which is 20 foot by 8 foot. It's been between, or 8 inches maybe, it's a pretty long strip. But it's between her neighbors, wild shrubs and her daylilies. There are two stumps that decided to kill the grass, the weeds, and broadcast wild flowered seeds.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough area to mow, so she's trying to get a solution there. She sprayed, waited 3 weeks, raked, sprayed, waited 3 weeks. Turned the dirt over by hand because there are just too many roots to get a tiller in there, and added a bag of veggie and plant dirt, scattered some seeds, some more dirt topped with mulch, watered, and saw some growth. But the problem is, this week, poke has taken over.
Pokeweed.
Yeah.
Ooh. So
got a pokeweed garden. What should be the first thing I do? A little poke salad Annie, maybe.
Yeah. Poke salad Annie.
Great time.
When you pull pokeweed, you know, it's got like a little bit of a taproot element to it. You know, you don't always get it out. You got to really, to get rid of it, you know, dig deep, okay, and eradicate it that way. Or spray Kills-All on it. And again, you want to get it on as much of the plant as possible, as much of the leaf surfaces as possible.
Right.
And anything with glyphosate in it directly onto the leaves should kill the plant. You know, it goes into the vascular system of the plant, so you should see some really good results with that. So Kills-All, you can pick that up from anybody that's a Fertilum dealer or sells high-yield products. That is a high-yield product, as a matter of fact. And you can pick that up at your local garden centers and nurseries. But that's where I would go. You know, it's a little digging and a little bit of spraying. Sometimes when you're, you know, she said she had turned the soil over by hand.
Right.
Sometimes what you're doing as well, and this is why we talk about buying good topsoil. When you turn it over by hand and you're rototilling too, sometimes what you're doing is you're digging down several inches, okay? And you're bringing weed seed back to the surface that's never seen the light of day during that process.
Oh, okay.
So what happens once you introduce that weed seed or whatever it is, it's back to the top of the surface. It's like, oh, this is what I've been waiting for. This is that magical moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get light. I'm going to get air. I'm going to get water. And here you go.
Right.
Yeah. Now, going back to what she brought in there too, she had brought in some soil. Again, I'm not exactly sure what that was.
Mm-hmm.
However, when you buy that stuff, it's 99 cents in a bag.
Right.
If you hang around some of those stores long enough that sell that and the bags start to deteriorate, you'll see weeds growing out of there that you can't even identify.
So the poke could have been in the soil.
Well, who knows?
Yeah.
You know, but that is what it is. You know, just think about it. If you had an operation where, oh, I need to get rid of some soil, let's bag this stuff. Hey, we'll knock it out, sell for 50 cents a bag or whatever, 99 cents a bag. You know, those are dollars. That adds up. They're like pennies. You don't know where that came from.
Sure.
I'm telling you right now, sometimes you'll see things, if you look long enough in some of those bags, when they sit on top of pallets or they start to break down as the plastic starts to biodegrade, or you'll see stuff growing out of them like, well, how did that get in there?
Yeah.
Well, it was probably
in there. I didn't plant that.
So it's hard to say. So when Joanne turned the soil up, you know, under and up, she could have introduced some things to the top. Or vice versa, brought it in or introduced it with something in a bag.
Right. So try that. Take some pictures and please post them, Joanna, on our Facebook page. We'd like to follow along, too. And then add Tony Joe White to your playlist.
Tony Joe White. What's
Polk,
that?
Polk Salad Annie.
Oh, is that the author,
that
the
song?
The musician?
Yeah.
Oh, got it.
We're going to look that up and like, or look that up and play it when we get back. Go. And Tony, we have Chris on the line from Green Township who's got, I guess, a maple tree question. Are you wanting to trim it or are you having issues with it, Chris? What's going on with your tree?
I actually have three small maple trees I grew from the whirlybirds.
Yeah.
And they're maybe 12 foot tall.
Oh, cool. How's the structure? Is the structure nice? Branching nice?
Yeah, the one's branching out, I mean, crazy all over. And then the other one's like growing like a normal tree, and then at the top it branches out.
Mm-hmm.
My issue is they're getting like black spots on the leaves.
It's like, maybe like what they call maple tar spots.
Yeah, it's like on a couple of the leaves.
Nothing, you know, let it run its course. Nothing to be concerned about. That can happen.
Okay.
So, you know, I wouldn't worry about that. It's more aesthetic than anything.
Okay.
You know, a lot of times that's environmental. You know, it's brought on by wet weather, you know, just humidity levels and so forth. But certainly let them run their course.
Okay.
As far as pruning maples, when you prune a maple late winter, early spring, that's not the ideal time to do it. Just I'm throwing that out there for you because at that time, you know, all of its energy and all the sap is flowing upward. And that's why people who like to gather the maple syrup and so forth and do all that good stuff with it are doing it at that time. That's when the sap's running.
Okay.
You know, a good time to prune those would be after they drop their foliage in the fall. And then you can take a nice look at it structurally and see where you need to make the pruning cuts and approach it from that standpoint.
Okay, yeah, because the one, like I said, it's grown. It's like maybe 2 foot out of the ground, and then it's got a bunch of branches coming off of it. So at that time, just trim the small those off at the bottom.
Yeah, you know, as you're looking at the structure of that tree and its youth there, that the beauty of that is it's growing, and you can wait a little longer. You don't have to prune right away, but as you start to see it, as it starts to put out those lateral branches, you can shape that accordingly. And have a wonderful looking specimen as it matures and gets older. You know, always prune with a purpose. And we've said this often here on the show that the three D's to pruning, you know, anything that's diseased, dead, or damaged is a must prune item.
Okay.
In your situation, you know, just let things take its course and do your pruning later in the season when it drops its foliage. You know, as long as. And when I say when things drop their foliage, it's just easier to look into the tree, the structure itself, without any obstruction from the leaves and make the right pruning cuts.
Okay.
All right?
All right.
Have a good weekend.
Much. You're
welcome.
And good luck with that. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, I didn't hear back from my wife Lisa. We're talking about the fresh peaches from... She got 15 quarts out of that. She got canned. And also, she wanted to let you know that the recommendation to put the systemic drench on the roses, we were having issues with, saved the roses.
You know, thanks, Lisa. That is so important. And that's how good that product really is. And we say it often, if you're really looking to have nice-looking rose bushes throughout the season, use the systemic tree and shrub drench from Fertilume. It contains imidacloprid, and imidacloprid, there's a lot of controversy over it, and I have to put some emphasis on this. You know, it's using it the way that it should be used, and try and use it when things aren't in bloom. You know, just make sure that we are looking out and protecting the bees. But in the situation with the rose bushes, it's wonderful. It will keep the rose slug off of your rose bushes, and the foliage will look spectacular all throughout the growing season. And you do that. I try to encourage gardeners to do that with their rose bushes late winter, early spring, when they make their initial prune cuts, other than, you know, you don't want to prune back your climbers. But, you know, any of your miniature roses, your drift roses, your shrub roses, your knockout roses, when you make that prune cut, you know, when you go back to about 12, 15 inches, get in the habit of using the Fertilume tree and shrub systemic drench. You're going to use 3 ounces of that particular product to 1 gallon of water for every foot height of plant. Now, I want to say this and put some emphasis on this. Just because when you cut them back to 12 to 15 inches, mm-hmm. doesn't mean it's going to be 3 ounces to 1 gallon of water, and that's going to take care of you throughout the growing season with your rose bushes. You have to anticipate the height that that rose bush can grow to. So in most situations, at least factor on it getting 3 foot in height, maybe 4. So therefore, you're going to use at least 9 ounces of the systemic drench to 1 gallon to 2 gallons of water, or maybe 12 ounces. So don't look at it from where, you know, you make the prune to or your pruning cuts to. Mm-hmm. It's what it can grow to.
I got you.
And I think a lot of people, they'll think that they're just going to use 3 ounces to 1 gallon of water. And as that plant gets 3 or 4 feet in height, to be quite honest with you, there's not enough product in it. And then they'll say, I've used the drench, but I'm still having that problem. I think that's why you're still having the problem, because you did the measurements according to where you made the prune cut.
Mm. Very good information.
So I just want to put some emphasis on that, because I've had some friends tell me that people are saying they're still having issues with the drench. And with the drench, it's a stronger concentrated amount, and you get longer effectiveness with it as far as protection for your plant. Mm-hmm. Now, there's other products where they want you to do it every 6 weeks or every 8 weeks. And because of that, you better make sure you overlap it. Mm-hmm. And if you let some time go in between applications, you can be afflicted with the rose slug issue. Or if you're using granular products and we're not getting enough water or precipitation, or you're not watering, therefore it's sitting on top of the surface of the soil and it's not breaking down, getting into the vascular root system of the plant and going up into it to protect it.
Got it. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We've got Dennis on the line. We'll come to you right after the break. A little music for Joanne for her poke.
Got it, Annie.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been covering a lot of ground today, getting you ready for the weekend and middle of the summer. A lot of people have some tree issues. We have Dennis on the line from Fairfield. Tony's got a question about a flowering plum tree. You're wanting to trim it, or are you waiting for something to bloom on it?
Well, it bloomed earlier in the season. It was beautiful, all full.
Uh-huh.
And now all the leaves are gone.
Oh,
completely shedded all of its leaves.
All the foliage
wow. is gone off of it.
Wow.
Ooh. And if you go out there and, you know, maybe try to bend a limb or something, they're green, they're solid, they're not breaking off like it's dead or anything.
Yeah, it's like a blight of some sort. I would have an arborist look at that. And the thing of it is, boy, and that can happen too. It's how old is the tree?
Maybe 5 years old.
And this is the first time you've experienced any of that kind of a problem with it?
Right, yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, definitely have an arborist take a look at it. The good thing is that it's still green underneath. You've taken a pocket knife or your fingernail and scraped back some of the outer skin of the tree or some of the limbs, and that they're still pliable is a good sign. I'm just kind of curious, by chance, is there any bud development on that tree, or is trying to... maybe put out a secondary set of leaves?
Haven't seen a thing.
Nothing like that. Does the tree, by chance, any sap oozing out of it?
Nope.
No?
Nuh-uh.
Any of the branches have any black nodules on it? Or?
Haven't seen any.
Okay. Yeah, boy, something definitely is a pathogen of some sort, a blight. That it's just defoliated. I would certainly have an arborist take a look at it. And okay. I'm not sure the exact treatment for that and when that should occur. I know that in some of those situations, a lot of times, you know, you want to treat those trees when they're in a dormant stage. Guys who are arborists, they like to treat some of these trees with injection in the fall season for the next spring.
Uh-huh.
And you as a homeowner, you can treat those trees when they're dormant with a dormant oil spray. And also, you'll need to come back and spray again just as you know, the buds start to swell open. But let me see if we can get a hold of Tim back or and shed a little bit more light on this. And when you get off of the phone here with us, I want you to hold on. I'm going to have John get some information from you so I can contact you.
Okay.
And we can get you in touch with somebody to take a look at your tree.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's unfortunately, and that can happen. That's for sure. And it happens quick, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It took maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and it was done for. I mean, everything was gone. It was a beautiful tree.
Now, here's something I want to add to this whole scenario, and if you haven't already done so, is I want you to remove everything that has fallen from that tree and get it up and discard it. Do not put that in a compost bin. Do not use that or just discard it and take it out to the trash.
Okay.
We don't want what's going on to harbor itself and lie around underneath that tree and you know, rear its ugly face next season.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll stay in touch with you here. Okay. Hang right, on. I'm going to have John get some information from you.
All right.
Thank you.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We've been covering a lot of ground this morning, talking a lot about lawn care and a couple of things because Tony says that we're in maintenance mode right now. So all of the work that we've done up to this point will lead us to glorious things in the fall. But right now, we just have to maintain. So you start seeing a few things pop up, you got to take care of them.
Well, that last call in particular, you know, when you see things like that, it's a type of blight. And trying to determine what that is can be really difficult. And it's one of those situations where that's where we need to turn to our good friends from the extension services take in some samples and find out exactly what's afflicting or what the problem is. And I say this often because, you know, those of us who have garden centers and nurseries, you know, we have some things on the shelves that will help homeowners do things in order to protect your trees against you know, pathogens, fungus issues, insect issues, and so forth. But sometimes, you know, what we need to do is find out exactly what's going on before we go to the shelf and pull something off. And I practice that approach often because I'm not there really to sell people, just to sell people things. I really want to help you overcome the problem.
Yeah.
And let's find out exactly what it is. And I use our extension services over in Northern Kentucky often. And I'm sure you can ask Mike, Claire, and Joe out of Boone County and so forth, and Sarah over at Campbell County, and Melissa out there at Kenton County. So use your extension services. I can't say that enough because you're going to get the right information back because they'll send off the information or the samples to the universities, and they come back with very detailed reports as to what's going on. And then you can attack and go after it like you should with what it is that you need to get.
You know, I forgot to ask if there were any other damages to some of the other trees around this particular tree, if it was just dedicated to
that's
that.
That's interesting. I said, Melissa, I meant Michelle Stanton.
Yeah.
I apologize for that. Michelle Stanton in Kenton County. So, you know, find out what it is exactly that's going on, and then let's approach it. And, you know, often I'll run into customers that, like, I want this, I want that, and this. And they feel really comfortable, and it's almost like buying an insurance policy. Well, I have all three of these. One of these has to work.
Yeah.
That's not necessary.
Right.
And I'm certainly not there to do that, nor encourage you to do that, nor should anyone else that has a reputable garden center and nursery. We want you to be successful with what it is that you're attacking.
Mm-hmm.
But that's very interesting. That's some sort of a blight. I'm not exactly sure what that is. But Dennis will definitely get back with you on that.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. Several ways to stay connected with us, and certainly by checking our Facebook page. I mean, and you can drop us a line. You can pose questions and post pictures, and stay in touch with us.
Definitely. You know, so our little segment, what's bugging you? Anything bugging you, Ernie? I'll tell you what's been bugging a lot of people, and a lot of people have been coming into the garden center. They're fed up with the Japanese beetles.
Oh.
Oh.
You got a lot of issues with them, or well, are you hearing a lot about them?
If you're noticing a lot of skeletonized, we're not at Halloween yet, like leaves and so forth on your trees or your shrubs and what have you.
Yeah.
A lot of times that's, you know, it's kind of an indicator. It might be Japanese beetles feeding on your, right. the foliage of your plants. And what you don't want to do, I'm going to encourage you not to do this. If in fact you do, get one for your neighbors, not for yourself. The pheromone traps. So, you can buy the pheromone traps for Japanese beetles. And at this point in time, we're probably starting to see them wane off a little bit. But, you know, during the month of June, they're out there finding plants to land on and let the old pheromone juice rip out
right,
and attract others to find mates and lay eggs. You know, that's the whole life cycle and process of the Japanese beetle. But you can do a couple of things. You know, like I said, do not get the traps. If you put the traps in your yard, what you're doing essentially is this. You're helping your neighbors because you're going to bring them all to your yard.
Right.
So, like I said, just be a courteous neighbor and say, hey, I bought some traps for you guys. Those neighbors across the street or some of those neighbors down the street. So all the little Japanese beetles will go over there.
It's a gift.
It's a gift from me for you. Yeah, there you go. Like it's a gift. Yeah, it's a housewarming gift.
No, you know, something that's
being nice.
I haven't seen at all, and I think this was supposed to be the year for those cicadas.
Oh, well,
I know
that you have the summer cicadas, which they're here every year, and I've heard those guys, you know, they're singing all the time and doing their thing. They're really not as much of a nuisance. They are, but not like some of the... those that the 17-year brood, I don't know all the broods, but some the 7-year, the 17-year, the 35-year or whatever, those are the ones that pose the most problems. But the summer cicadas can be a nuisance too, don't get me wrong. But they're bothering some people as well. You know, some people like to get those tennis rackets that have that little electrical charge and swat insects. There's a couple little kids in the neighborhood. They just have a ball with that. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I've never seen that.
Yeah, it's like a little tennis racket-looking mechanism or item that I don't know if you put batteries in it, but as soon as they swat something, it just goes, zzz, you know? It's like a bug zapper that you have at your house.
I don't have a bug zapper.
What do they call that? There's a,
but that's hilarious. I guess it would be a cicada go then, just like the Pokemon Go. You'd send the kids out there and let them have at it.
Yeah, I don't know. Somebody knows something about that little toy or that tool that kids can... I don't know. Maybe adults like it, too. I don't know.
Somebody
will call me about it. Yeah, the kids in the neighborhood have a few of them. But anyway, talking about the Japanese beetles, the adults, you know, they usually emerge sometime in May and through June, depending upon whatever area that they may be in. Some areas are more afflicted with a Japanese beetle than others, obviously. They fly to a plant, like I said, feed, release a pheromone, and they do the old little mating. Oh, yeah, and that pheromone attracts others and brings them in, so you'll start seeing a lot of the beetles. That's why I was telling you, don't do the traps.
Okay. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. What's been bugging you? The Japanese beetle always seems to be an issue. And how do you control those guys?
Well, it's been an issue for some more than others, but I used to have issues with them when I first moved in our neighborhood, and they loved my weeping larch. And they would just feed all over it anymore. You know, I don't have to worry about it. But I would always use, there's a couple products that you can use. If, in fact, you're using a systemic insecticide, like we talk about the imidacloprid that's in the Fertilum tree and shrub drench, that will work on the Japanese beetle. But the problem is, you might say, well, they're still feeding on it. Well, yes, they come in and they still feed on the shrub or the tree or whatever. But they'll fly away and die somewhere because of, as a result of eating on your plant that was treated with the drench. The other thing that you can do is use 7. You could use 38 plus from High Yield. I love that product. That's great. And you could use Bonides 8. Any of those will help curtail the activity of the Japanese beetle to a degree. Definitely a nuisance, but anytime you see the skeletonized look of a leaf on a shrub or a tree or anything of the sort, usually that's an indicator that it's Japanese beetle activity. So easy to control. Like I said, 38 plus. I can't say enough about that particular insecticide. It works wonderful. I use that around my house often. And you can use 7, you could use 8, or you can use a systemic drench. But again, refrain from, you know, when you're trying to combat these guys, don't try and get the pheromone traps. You're going to create a lot more problems for yourself. The other thing too, and a lot of people think because they have a lot of Japanese beetles that they have grub issues. That's not always necessarily the case, because those Japanese beetles can come from other areas of the neighborhood or two streets up where they shouldn't be. You know, I'm just saying that.
Yeah.
Don't hang around with that Wilson kid up the street. But it doesn't mean that they are necessarily coming from your yard or your turf. They can come from wherever. So don't always go to guns and think I have grub issues. But using grub control products, you know, will help keep those guys at bay, because once those eggs hatch, and usually it's about 14 days after they are laid in the soil from the female, those grub control products are very effective. And they're best effective after the egg-laying process, because the larvae are so small, they're not older, more developed, stronger, and starting to go deep as they do later in the season when everybody starts noticing I've had grub control damage in the lawn. So if the Japanese beetle's bothering you, go out and see your local friends at your local nurseries and garden centers and get the right product to take care of them.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have another tree question for you. This is Tony from Verona, who has an apple tree question. Hi, Tony.
Hello, how you doing today?
All right, what kind of problems are you having with your apple tree?
I actually got two problems. One problem is I planted this apple tree about 5 years ago, and they're full blooms, but I ain't getting no apples off of them.
Are both the trees the same species?
Please?
You said you have two apple trees?
Yes.
Are they different trees, or are they the same species?
Same ones, yeah.
You should be getting some pollen. You should be getting some pollination there if they're the same tree, because they're blooming at the same time.
Right.
And having that setup is to your benefit. A lot of times, apple trees can also pollinate one another as far as being a mile apart. Or making sure that, you know, there's various types of trees. Some will bloom earlier than others. You got early bloomers, mid-season bloomers, late-season bloomers. And having them blooming at the same time is of the essence. So that's why you want one more than one in your landscape. So obviously something's going on with the pollination element there. And it could have been, it varies. It depends, too, if you had some issues with a heavy frost or a freeze, which we had up into the middle of May. If you remember that.
Yeah, that's right.
So that can also knock out the bloom buds, and therefore pollination is not as good as it normally could be. That could have very. How old are your trees?
I planted them about 5 years ago. They're about 12 foot tall.
Okay. Now, last year did you have any apples, any fruiting?
No. The last 3 years they've been blooming, but I ain't getting no apples off in the last 3 years.
Have you done any pruning at all recently?
No, uh-uh. Okay.
No, he has the blooms, Ernie. That's very interesting. What I would do, you know what, I got to look into this one a little more, because there's definitely evidence of some pollination issues right here. And, for example, you know, we're talking about insect pollination. We're also talking about wind pollination. You should be seeing that. You should be getting some fruit set. And the only thing that would prohibit that, you know, that I can tell you right off the bat is those bloom buds freezing out prematurely.
Yeah, I live down in the valley, so it gets early, late frost, and, you know, it stays cool down the valley pretty much, so that might be a part of the issue there, too.
It very well could be, and that's what you've seen the last couple of seasons. It's really hard to say, but having two of the same species, you're set up to be successful, no doubt about it. Now, having two different types of species of apples, then I would have to question the bloom period. You know, I'm give your number to John. So, yes. In addition to Dennis, I'm going to call Dennis back about his flowering plum tree, and I'll see what else I can find out for you and pass along some information.
So hold on the line. We're going to go to a break, and then we'll get some information from you. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Dan on the line, who is from Cincinnati and looking for the perfect plants. Got a shady, drought-resistant looking for a plant that works well in shady, drought-resistant areas. Hey, Dan, you have us on speakerphone by any chance?
Yeah, Dan, you got to turn that off.
Please?
Dan, do you have us on a speakerphone?
I had the radio on.
Okay, all right. If you could turn that down just a little bit. So you're looking for some plants that are drought resistant?
Yes, like a bush or a plant. Something's low maintenance. She doesn't have to go out there and like water all the time or something.
Gravel.
I was thinking the same thing.
Like artificial flowers are usually the best. How funny.
Yeah, pave it. Get some, get a friend of yours, get some concrete down and paint it. I'm just joking.
Are we talking sun, Dan, or are we talking shade?
Lots of sun.
Lots of sun. Is your wife looking to do some perennials of any sort?
This is actually one of my customers. She has roses back there, and the bugs have just eaten them like crazy. I don't go there all the time to do work on the landscape. So
right.
She wants something that, you know, that can be maintenance by either myself or her son, but that she doesn't have to get out there and do it all.
Right. So, well, you know, immediately I think, too, I'm still a big fan of ornamental grasses. I think they have an element. They got great texture that's really a value to the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly those, once they're established, they're no-brainers. There's no doubt about it. Looking
it's
at some
a long area along a deck. She's thinking about something, some sort of bush.
Okay. You know, is she just looking for like a foundation kind of shrub?
Something that looks nice that, she doesn't have to do a lot of maintenance to.
Maybe we could talk Jesse Tech out of the holly trees.
There you go.
Holly bushes.
There you go. You know, there's a number of things that you can use. If you want to stay in the evergreen world, okay, certainly, you know, boxwoods will tolerate some sun. I love the boxwoods, green velvet in particular. There's a number of different boxwoods. You're familiar with them. Once they're established, you know, they can take a little bit of a dry period, but still they want to have some moisture, too. Going along that foundation, I would certainly consider, this is a plant that I still think deserves a lot of merit because it's very tough. It's very resilient. It can take a hard pruning and will give you a nice fall showing. And that's obviously the burning bush. And there's one even a shorter.
I was just going to ask you about that, if a burning bush would be a good application.
It certainly would, because once they're in there, they're tough. They're tough as nails.
Yeah.
And there's another newer variety of that, too. You know, we talk about the dwarf compacted burning bush, which really gets about 6 to 8 feet easy. There's one called Little Moses, if I'm not mistaken. That's the name of it. It stays a little smaller.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking for something a little bit more compact, that might be an answer or another alternative as well.
Can you get those anywhere?
Yeah, most of your garden centers, most definitely.
Okay.
You know, another little tough plant, believe it or not, is one. It's a physocarpus called Little Devil. Nine Bark. It's another name called, you know, another common name for it's called Nine Bark. Very tough, very resilient. Just has a nice element about it with some exfoliating bark or stems, you know, for winter interest.
Okay.
That's certainly one. I'll tell you another one that I like a lot, too, and it's not an evergreen, but it berries up, and that's the Japanese beauty berry, Calocarpa. I think that plant deserves a little bit more merit than what it actually gets in the landscape, and, you know, it has some interest with it, you know, when it berries up in the fall. They'll ride the whole stem. Has, you know, the Japanese beauty berry has nice arching branches. Another good addition to the landscape. Looking at some perennials, perhaps. You know, the Shasta daisies would be a nice addition. Becky in particular gets really good size. If you want a smaller one, look for snowcap. Echinaceas, your rutabeckias. Monarda, Japanese bee balm. Or not Japanese, just bee balm. And, you know, the Monarda is a good plant, great perennial. Some of your sedums, they take it. They're drought resistant. You know, Autumn Joy is an old favorite. You know, they call them live forevers. There's a lot of things that you can put over there alongside. How long's the run?
We're looking about 25 to 30 foot.
And any height restrictions?
Just the deck on there.
We don't
want to get real tall. The deck has a maybe a 3 to 3.5 foot rail around it.
Some viburnums, you know, as I think about the viburnums, one in particular I like a lot. It's called Cardinal Candy. Very hardy. As a matter of fact, that's a kind of a local introduction from Rod Henneke over in Indiana. Viburnums you can't go wrong with. Carlisii, Juddi, you know, certainly something there worth considering. So, you know, you have a number of choices there.
Where would be my best place to go for getting all of that?
Where are you calling in from?
Cincinnati. And my customer's in Loveland.
The Loveland area. I'm trying to... Are you familiar with that area, Ernie?
Anywhere from, like, the Coleraine area to Loveland. Somewhere around there. You know,
Over on the Coleraine side, over in that area, you can go to White Oak.
Okay.
Very good garden center over there. See Jeff Weebler or... Tom Hilgeman.
Okay.
They can definitely point you in the right direction and certainly accommodate your needs for what you want to do.
Okay, great.
Well, let us know how it turns out. You know, you got Schwab Nursery, I think you can visit over in that area.
Now, that one I'm not familiar with. Where are they at?
Oh, hang on, I'll look up that exact address.
Okay.
And on the west side in Cincinnati, you're not too far from, you may be able to stop over at Robbins Florist and Garden Center, see what they have on hand.
Okay.
So you have a number of nurseries over there to check into.
With the temperatures right now, is it a bad time to plant all that, or would you wait till the fall?
You know, the fall is an ideal time to plant, but I certainly wouldn't be hesitant to plant. You know, as long as you're taking care of things like you should and making sure they're adequately watered. No, you know, certainly we got a lot of planting in front of us. And Schwab's over there on Ebenezer Road.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if you're familiar with that area, 3478 Ebenezer.
Yep. All right. Great.
So see any of those three guys, and definitely you'll find what you're looking for.
Sounds good. Thank you for all your help.
You're welcome. Have a good weekend.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
All right, 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have Chris on the line from Cincinnati. He's got a peach tree question for you, Tony. Hi, Chris. Thanks for hanging on.
Hello, Chris.
Are you there, Chris? Did we lose you? Okay.
Call us back. Yeah, hate when we lose people.
A lot of challenges there. Like that, you know, where you have just a difficult area. And when you said burning bush, that was the first thing on my mind, was that burning bush we have at the back of the yard is gorgeous. It's in a difficult spot, but it's hung on. It's survived. It's really thrived, honestly.
You know, those type of situations, as that gentleman was just talking about with the deck and so forth, really a lot of it has to do with, if you're thinking evergreens, you know, is one thing. If you're thinking things that are deciduous, when we say deciduous, that means they lose their leaves, their foliage. It just varies. It's all about what the homeowner's interested in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, grasses in that situation would make for a wonderful addition as well. It just varies. I also like to use things in a grouping, in a drift, where they're all the same thing.
Right.
You know, another shrub that I really like a lot, it can tolerate some shade too, is Father Gila, you know, Gardenii, a beautiful, beautiful fall color. You know, it turns the most vibrant oranges and reds and yellows in the fall months. It's a plant that I think should get more notoriety than what it does.
Mm-hmm.
Itius, you know, Henry's Garnet or Little Henry or Merlot would be some other suitable options or choices there. So it's really endless. You know, you can, there's a lot of opportunities out there to put different plants. You know, something else too, right now is a perfect time. And, you know, if Bob Bard was in here with us, he does a lot of landscape designs and so forth. You know, a lot of our landscapers are starting to get caught up. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some that are still busy, and that's a great thing. But they're starting to get caught up a little bit. So now's a good time maybe to get with some of your landscapers and designers and talk about something you might want to do for the fall season. It's never too early.
No.
And when you go in to see someone in a local garden center or a nursery, do me a favor. And everyone comes in and, I get this, well, I have a bed. It's from, they'll look at my counter, say from here, and they'll push their leg up and point in another direction over there about to there about 30 feet and about this wide. And that doesn't tell me anything, and nor will it tell anyone else anything. Yeah. You know, I get that all the time. And, you know, really, we're going to be a lot more, we're going to be of more help if you come in armed. And when I say that, with some photographs. And just simply, you know, with today's technology, use your cell phone or use your camera, your digital camera phone. Print some pictures. Just print some things out on regular sheets of paper. And print more than one copy of each area so we can draw on that. Because we're going to doodle a lot on those pictures. And you think that's funny, but that's the truth.
No,
I know that. how much sun do you get or how little do you get? And on a nice clear day, cup of coffee in your hand or a beer or an iced tea or whatever, go out about every hour, chart it out. You know, talk about things that you like, things that you don't like, so we can help you and be of more benefit to you with this landscape project. You know, how big are the beds? Because what's really important here is putting the plant, the right plant in the right location that does not overgrow that specified area. Because once that happens, then, you know, you have a shrub or you have a tree that's protruding out on a sidewalk where your guest or your neighbors or your friends, when they pull in your driveway and when they walk up to your front door, they got to walk around that tree or that shrub. Mm-hmm. You do not want that situation. Don't go for instant gratification. Allow plants to grow to their average size and height, you know, width. And keep that in mind. Don't fill things in because you'll end up taking things out. You only want to do this once. You don't want to come back and work on it in 3 years or 4 years or 5 years. Do it once. And once you get that curb appeal in, it's going to make the value of your home a lot more. And it's going to make it more attractive to a potential buyer if you ever want to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't litter it up. Don't garbage it up.
Right.
I see that often. And really, when somebody's looking to buy a home, an existing home, they don't want all that work.
Sure.
So just do your due diligence. Get that information, and we can be a great value to you with helping you do it on your own, or we can suggest somebody that can do it for you.
Mm-hmm. And also make your plans to get out to see our friend Jerry out at Watson's. Their tent sale gets underway on Monday, and you were talking a little bit about, you know, homeowners, new homeowners, if you're putting it on a market, design and set up and get an outside living space started.
You know what? That's a selling point in itself. And just like Jerry said, real estate agents now are starting to incorporate that whole living space outside into that home's amenities, you know, what it has to offer. And when you put nice looking furniture out there on your deck, it makes it inviting. It makes somebody feel as if I can sit in that chair or on that sofa and enjoy myself and relax.
When we talked to him, he said that key thing there was get two comfortable chairs. First and foremost,
get six
and sit down and look around with your significant other and your partner and just talk about, this is gorgeous. Let's do this and let's make this step next. Get comfortable, but make sure you get the Watsons and get to join us next week in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Make it a great weekend. We'll talk to you next Saturday.